This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, Texas is moving to close at least one door to sexual predators, that is the bathroom door. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick is here to discuss the Women's Privacy Act, which was announced earlier today in Austin. Also, Congress is weighing in on President Obama's use of the United Nations to undermine Israel on his way out of the White House. What are they doing? Arizona Congressman Trent Franks is here with the details. And speaking of the UN, former Congresswoman and member of the House Intelligence Committee, Michelle Bachmann joins me to discuss how our State Department uses the United Nations to undermine our values both abroad and here at home. That's coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, I give you that website. If you are not receiving my daily updates, I want to encourage you to go to that website and sign up for our alerts and updates. Very critical as we begin in the 115th Congress. We're going to see a lot of things moving quickly, and you are going to need to be able to weigh in with your members, with your member of Congress and your senators. They're going to need to hear from you, both to help push the good stuff and to stop the bad stuff. Look, our responsibility did not stop after the November election. It has just begun, and we need you to be a part of the team. Go to TonyPerkins.com, sign up for those alerts. Also, if you're on Twitter, you can keep up with what's happening at T. Perkins. All right, Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick teamed up with State Senator Lois Kolkhorst in announcing the Texas Women's Privacy Act in Austin earlier today. Now, this simply is a measure that addresses an issue that bureaucrats have been pushing across the country. In fact, something that started in Washington, D.C. with the Obama administration, forcing local schools and such, or prodding, I would say, they didn't have the weight of the law to force them, but they used intimidation to force schools to open up their restrooms, showers, locker rooms to kids of the opposite sex. And it's created a security and privacy issue. Joining me now to talk about this is the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Texas, Dan Patrick. Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you, and thank you for all you do for the values that America believes in.
Well, I appreciate that, and the legislature, they're going to be starting shortly in a new session. The you teamed up with a Senate sponsor, Lois Kolkhorst, who is had introduced this bill. Tell us what the bill does.
And she is she's a dynamo, by the way. She's she'll do a great job carrying this bill, and a former NCAA athlete who brings an interesting perspective on it too, because they've had some opposition to this, as you know, around the country, and penalized in part the state of North Carolina. First of all, the bill is very simple, Tony. Men should not be in ladies' rooms. It's really that simple. You know, it's common decency, common courtesy, most of all, public safety. And so,
and that's a pretty radical. That's a pretty radical concept in 2017.
Yeah. In fact, Tony, here's what's interesting, and I don't know about other states, but in Texas, we don't have a law that says a man can't go into the ladies' room. We've never needed one.
Right.
People didn't do it. And so we've now been forced by the Obama administration, who passed down that edict that you know, schools could lose their funding if they didn't allow boys and girls showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms. And by the way, it would not be good enough under the Obama edict for a school to provide a separate entity.
Right. They're very specific about that. They're very specific about that.
Yeah. They have to be able to commingle. And then in the city of Houston, back in 2015, there was this ordinance that the mayor then, without any voter approval, pushed through, doing the same thing for all government bathrooms. And as you know, the church community came together, black, white, and brown, Republican and Democrat, and in a heavy Democrat city of Houston, we defeated that issue 61% to 39%, so the people turned it back. That's the biggest. There's been one small town, I think, had a vote, but this has really been the only place where where polling is really seen in the evidence of an election. So that's the history, and that's how I got involved. And then we had two of our school districts in Texas, the Fort Worth Independent School District, again, without any parental approval, without any school board vote, enact a policy that did the same thing. Boys and girls can use the same bathroom, showers, and locker rooms. In fact, that policy was so over the top that that school, and that's a district of 86,000 kids, by the way, a big school district, that you couldn't even call boys, boys, and girls, girls anymore in that school district. And then we had another school district. So we, as conservative Republicans in Texas, we are responding. Again, this is not a fight that we started. Neither did they start it in North Carolina. Charlotte started it. So our bill does this. Three simple things. Number one, our bill says we believe in free enterprise. I'm a small business guy. That no government entity can pass any law or ordinance that forces a business to allow men in the ladies' room. If we leave it up to the business. If businesses want to do it, that's up to them, and we'll let their shoppers and their customers vote with their feet. Number two, no school district can enact any policy that allows boys to use the girls' restroom or vice versa, showers and locker rooms. And number three, no government entity can allow any policy that allows men in government bathrooms. That would be a library, a courthouse, a rest stop, government bathrooms. The bill is that simple. Not very complicated.
No, and I want to go back to something you said earlier, Lieutenant Governor, that you know this is common sense legislation which should never have been needed. I mean, you didn't have to have a law in the books to say a man should go in a men's room. I mean, this is what we were taught in kindergarten, and that was boys use boys' rooms and girls use girls' rooms, has been made old school by liberal bureaucrats, and you're simply trying to bring back common sense and privacy and security in the state of Texas.
Yeah, and the issue, you know, the outside opposition from the NCAA and others, I can tell you the Texans, like people in most other states, we don't like to be bullied or threatened. And when someone says, if you don't do what we tell you, we're going to punish you economically, that just doesn't play well in Texas. And secondly, I don't see how the NCAA or anyone else, I think what they did in North Carolina was incorrect, but I don't see how they can be against this bill. Because if you think about this, Tony, if you're against this bill, when we say to businesses, you can do what you want, so they're not impacted. In fact, we even say to businesses, let's say there's a government-built arena or stadium or convention center, most of those are leased out by private businesses. We're saying it's up to the business. It's up to the boat show or the gun show or the car show when they rent out space in the convention center. It's up to the football team or the basketball team or the ice show, whatever it is, in an arena. It's up to them. They're private business, so they're not impacted. We just want to be sure that 10th grade boys and girls aren't showering together, because no one wants that, and we don't want governments enacting that in government bathrooms, because it's a public safety issue, as you know, Tony.
Right.
You know, your team has done the research time after time. We've seen sexual predators, the same people that take advantage of the internet to pursue their victims, would take advantage of these loopholes in the laws. We're trying to keep people out of bathrooms or the sexual predators. And in terms of who can use a bathroom, it's based on your birth certificate, you know, and that's what the bill is. It's pretty simple.
Well, I want to take on a couple of the issues, or give you a chance to take on a couple of issues that the critics have raised. The Texas Association of Business said that they conducted a study, or helped conduct a study, that showed that this legislation could result in economic losses ranging between $964 million to $8.5 billion to the state. I mean, what do you have to say to that?
Well, it's laughable. As a matter of fact, I will tell you that the members of the Texas Association of Business have already said they don't even believe their own report. That report was based on not any economic data, but just extracting some numbers that some people who I believe with the TAB, who are just opposed against the bill, period, just wanted to try to make their argument. But it's no real data. It's ridiculous. We're the 10th largest economy in the world, Texas. I mean, if we were a country, we'd be the 10th largest. Our economy is larger than Russia, larger than Spain, than Mexico, than Canada, than Australia. And just like North Carolina that has a robust economy, this isn't going to impact our economy. And if someone threatens to take a basketball tournament away from us, as they have in in South Carolina, that's not going to deter us either. We're a strong state, and when we did the polling on this, Tony, not that we needed to because we knew where the people were based on the vote in Houston a year and a half ago, and again, in a Democrat city, it lost 61-39% when the black, white, and brown church all came to, the black, white, and brown church all came together, is that when we conducted the polling in Texas, 80% of Republicans don't want men in ladies' rooms. 75% to 80% of African-Americans don't want it. The same numbers of Hispanic voters, 56% of Democrats don't want men in ladies' rooms. This is not even an issue with the people. And again, our bill has nothing to do to discriminate against anyone. In fact, we've increased in our bill the penalties, the criminal penalties, in each class. So we bumped them up if any crime is committed in an area of intimacy, a bathroom or a locker room or a shower. We've increased that, and that protects everyone. Including people who be transgender, it protects everyone in Texas, and so this isn't discriminating against anyone. It's common sense, common decency, and most of all, public safety.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host Tony Perkins, joined by Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, discussing a bill introduced today, announced today, Senate Bill 6, the Texas Women's Privacy Protection Act. I recall very vividly what took place in Houston, Texas. We were there on the ground working in that initiative. But I want to connect, you know, what is associated with this agenda. I know you're addressing one narrow aspect of the privacy, but people need to realize that this whole redefinition of gender also poses a threat to religious liberty, as we saw in Houston. That's really what galvanized initially the opposition, where we had five pastors who had their sermons subpoenaed by the mayor simply because they, from their pulpit, said, look, this idea of businesses being forced to allow men to use the women's room and vice versa is wrong. And so you had government bullying them. And I want to put this before the listeners here to understand what's happening in Texas, because Texas has played a key role in this from the beginning. You had Houston. Then when you had President Obama and the Department of Education bullying schools across the country, it was Texas, through the Attorney General, that stood up and led a coalition of state attorneys generals that pushed back. And so you guys have been fighting these battles, and I would want to ask you, but my sense would be, based on what I've seen, that the public in Texas is very supportive of this initiative.
Very supportive. You know, as I shared with the poll numbers, across the spectrum, Anglo, African-American, Hispanic voters, or citizens, not even voters, and Republicans and Democrats, very supportive. And we're also have a bill that we have filed, the Pastor Protection Act. We are going to stop cities and governments from taking the sermons from pastors, being able in civil action to be able to take those sermons. Although I like what my pastor at Second Baptist, Dr. Ed Young, said when they subpoenaed his sermons. He said, well, I don't mind turning them over if they'll just promise to read them.
Yeah, so, I'm with him on that.
Yes, but we're going to pass the bill to stop that as well.
Governor, up against a break, I want to thank you for joining us. We'll talk more as this proceeds. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you, Tony. And we shortened the name, by the way, for you. It's easier to say.
All right.
You sponsor good, clean, constructive programs, we'll go out of our way to buy your products. We appreciate it. Uh-huh. You sponsor immorality, vulgarity, profanity, we'll make it a point not to buy your products, and we'll tell our friends and our neighbors and ask them to do the same.
Donald Wildman founded the American Family Association. The year was 1977.
Our billfolds have an off and on button, and as Christians, we have an obligation not to purchase products which we knowingly will go to help promote pornography and anti-Christian, anti-family values. You know what you're saying to me? You're saying to me, here's a choice. If you don't like it, turn it off. You're saying the same thing to me.
No.
You're telling me that if I sit down and I don't like sexual infidelity, and I don't like profanity, and I don't like seeing somebody clobber somebody over the head, then forget it.
Your continued support of the American Family Association keeps us on the front lines of America's culture war.
I love that story in Luke 15, where Jesus tells the story of the good shepherd who leaves his 99 sheep to find the one lost. When that lost sheep is found, he calls his friends together and says, "Rejoice with me, I've found my lost sheep." Wow, what a great picture of God that is. Most people can understand a God who forgives sinners who crawl to him and beg for mercy. Most people can imagine a God who makes sinners grovel in the dirt and beg and plead for forgiveness. But a God who actually runs to search for sinners in order to forgive them? A God who seeks out rebels in order to save them? Little wonder we stand amazed at the love of Jesus. That Jesus leaves his large flock so that one sinner won't be lost? That shows the abundance of his care. This is Johnny Erickson Tada, and I welcome you to rejoice with me today in your wonderful Good Shepherd who found you.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 1,790 families have had their homes rebuilt because of you, the listener at American Family Radio, when you have partnered with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims to no fault of their own who lose everything to see volunteers show up and help them rebuild. 2 years ago, we started a rapid response division that goes within 72 hours and since then have gone to 15 communities across America. Would you consider becoming a part of 8 Days of Hope as we continue to look for ways to grow the ministry in 2017, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well. Please continue to pray for the ministry as we look forward to what God has in store for us. Thank you so much for your prayers, your financial support, and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
AFR urges you to support the ministry of 8 Days of Hope at 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. A lot happening here in Washington, D.C. Busy week. Congress starting the process of cleaning up from 8 years of Obama. Man, that's their work is cut out for them. But there's some immediate work underway. And one is Congress is weighing in on what President Obama did by using, I would say, the U.N., by not using the United States veto to veto a resolution by the U.N. Security Council. It was Resolution 2334 by the United Nations Security Council that essentially slapped Israel on the way out as the president was leaving the White House. But Congress is addressing that even as we speak. Joining me now to talk about it is Arizona Congressman Trent Franks. Trent, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I love being on your program.
Well, we love having you. You're a great friend, defender of the faith, defender of all things sacred, and we're grateful for that. And once again, you've stepped into the gap to support our friend and ally Israel. Two things going on. One, you have introduced legislation to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I'll talk about that in a moment. But first, there is a vote today regarding the sense of the House as it pertains to the Security Council Resolution 2334. Tell our listeners about it.
Okay, well, let me set the table if I can. As you know, this is essentially a response to Barack Obama's absolutely disgraceful. I think what Barack Obama did to Israel at the UN not only disgraced the United States, but I think it will send him down the Mr. Obama down the corridor of history as a United States president that overtly betrayed the state of Israel. And I can't express to you how deeply I feel that and how I think utterly reprehensible his actions were. So want to make sure that everybody's clear on that point.
Well, and to set the stage further, the United States has always, in its capacity at the United Nations on the Security Council, has always used its veto to protect our ally Israel from these one-sided, biased resolutions that have been introduced.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the United Nations has just become sort of an anti-Semitic mob. And for this president to turn his back on Israel, you know, he said, I remember I was standing just a few feet from him at a big AIPAC conference when he said, you know, when the chips are down, I've got Israel's back. But he didn't tell anyone about the knife in his hand. And I again, just find it so tragic that this president hid in a lame duck session to do to Israel what he's probably had in mind to do for a long time. But this was a tragic situation, and it will be difficult for Israel to get beyond it. But that's one of the things that we're trying to do. Now, let me just, having said that, tell you that there is some language that I personally have a struggle with a little bit in this resolution. I don't suggest that I won't vote for it, because I definitely will, because I chair the Israel caucus here and deeply believe that we need to go on record as supporting our friend. But I'm kind of disappointed that we had to put a matrix in there that it sort of seems to want to impose a two-state solution of a particular type,
right,
in a way that I think reduces Israel's latitude. And again, sort of undermines the concept that we should let this be a negotiated solution.
Why was that in there? Why was that put in there?
Well, I have to be somewhat careful here, but I'm told, and I don't know that it's true or not, but I'm told that this was something that Israel felt was important that it be couched in those terms, which ameliorates it to a degree for me, even though I fundamentally have some concerns about it. And again, I know that there are really wonderful people on both sides of that issue that deeply support Israel, those that believe it has to be a two-state solution within the existing boundaries of Israel. I have no problem in the world. I want the Palestinians to have a home, but I just think that to suggest that the existing territory of Israel is Palestinian territory is a false notion.
I agree, and that may be the case that they said that, but I heard that a decade ago when there was the Land for Peace swap.
Yep.
When I asked, why are you supporting this, to Israeli officials, and they said, well, we want it, but to come to find out, they were being pressured by the U.S. So I'm always suspect when they're, because as you've been there many times, I've been there, this two-state solution notion is shaky at best, to think that you can have peace and security in a country that's the size of New Jersey, and you want to give up land or allow this two-state solution that will put you at risk, right next door.
Well, the Palestinian Authority has never recognized Israel's right to exist. They fundamentally and clearly and blatantly say that Israel doesn't have the right to exist, and we don't take them at their word. Their goal is clear. They want to see Israel completely wiped off the map, in my mind. And so I think that to give up additional land only brings terrorist activities closer and closer to what's left of Israel. And so I want to be careful, because I know that that sometimes we're subject to the opinions of others in an environment like Congress, and I know that there are those who deeply love Israel that have the conviction that a two-state solution is the only way within the existing borders of Israel. And so while I disagree with that, I believe that the two-state process is almost essentially being borne out on the ground. I mean, I see Palestinians and Israelis beginning to live together in peace, because those who really truly understand what the Palestinian Authority is all about eventually see that this isn't in their best interest.
That's not the solution. They know that.
Right.
Hey, Trent, we're up against a break. Can you hold on for 2 minutes?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because I want to finish this conversation, talk about this resolution that Congress is passing, which I think is important because it goes on record that they support Israel. Then I want to talk about your legislation. So, folks, don't go away. Arizona Congressman Trent Franks, our guest, talking about Israel. Congress fixing to vote any moment now on a resolution that pushes back on the UN Security Council's resolution from a couple of weeks ago. We're going to be talking about that. Still to come, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann is going to be with us as well. So don't go away. We're back with more after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
One thing that we are looking at here towards the end of the week is an article that was written by a PhD candidate from Harvard University, a specialist in economic history, indicating that there could be a historical bursting of a bond bubble. I find that interesting because this is a Harvard professor that is about as behind the curve as the Federal Reserve is in talking about a bond bubble. We talked about it for years. As a matter of fact, a couple years ago, I put out a warning to begin to get out of any bond mutual funds that you had because it seemed almost inevitable that we were going to be headed towards a bond bubble bursting. But at least they're finally talking about it as late as it might be. This is after 2 months now of significant downturns in bond mutual funds. Anyway, it looks like the stock rally is taking a bit of a pause ahead of some key job numbers coming out here at the end of the week. Not to mention, we also get factory order numbers out. So everyone is on pause to see what that is. As we hear the Federal Reserve minutes earlier in the week talk about a considerable uncertainty about the future of the Trump economic policies. The minutes pointed to a number of risks that could change the path of interest rate hikes coming from the Federal Reserve this year. Now, everyone was thinking there was going to be at least 3 interest rate hikes, but apparently they are pointing to some risk that they believe could change the frequency or at least how many interest rate hikes we could see in 2017.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. It's Thankful Thursday. That's right. Thankful Thursday. What are you thankful for? I'm thankful for a lot. Thankful for a wonderful wife, great kids, opportunity to serve. Thankful for the Lord who saved me and has given me a purpose and a mission. Grateful for all of that. And thankful for friends like Arizona Congressman Trent Franks, who's on the line with us. Trent, thanks for holding over the break. All right. This resolution, as we were talking about, speaks directly to what the UN Security Council did in terms of dealing with trying to marginalize these thriving communities, which are called by some settlements in Israel. So continue telling our audience what's playing out on the floor of the House today.
Well, as you probably know, there is that debate going on related to the two-state language. But overall, we do know that the resolution is a true attempt to try to point out to the world that America is truly committed to Israel. And so I will vote for the resolution, Tony, because of all the positives in it, and I think that that's something that all pro-Israel people should do. But that doesn't mean that we have to be silent on these other issues. And I think that resolution will pass overwhelmingly. I think if there was some concern that Democrats may not support it without certain language, we should have given them that opportunity. Because at this point, you know, many of the Democrats said that Barack Obama was a supporter of Israel. That wasn't true. And unfortunately, our biggest challenge sometimes, in whatever subject it might be, is just accountability, brother. And my friends on the left are masters at being able to do the wrong things and hold themselves unconstrained by the truth, and somehow are just contortionists in being able to avoid the accountability that goes with doing the wrong thing many times.
On another issue related to Israel, you have been among a handful of extremely strong advocates for Israel. You have legislation that you have introduced with others that would go along with what President-elect Donald Trump has said he wants to do, and that is to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Well, that's right. We introduced a bill already this early in the process that if this bill is able to get past the Democrat filibuster in the Senate, which is this really, it will be its biggest obstacle as long as leadership in both houses are inclined to see it go forward. I think they are. Time will tell. And I'm convinced that Mr. Trump will sign the bill. And as this bill is written, it would leave no question about where the embassy in Israel would be. It would be moved to Jerusalem. In my judgment, there's no question on almost any criteria that one could argue against that.
Have you had any conversations with Israeli officials? Are they supportive of that legislation?
I can tell you that their second hand conversations, but yes, I mean they've consistently supported legislation to move the embassy to Jerusalem. This is their undivided capital. This is, you know, their eternal capital, both in ecclesiastical terms, and they have shown a clear connection to Jerusalem and a presence in Jerusalem for 3,000 years, Tony. I don't know how in the world we ignore that. Israel, as far as I know, is the only country in the world where we do not place our embassy in their own chosen capital. And it's an injustice that has to be rectified, and I think it'll go a long way toward demonstrating the world that there's no space between America and the state of Israel.
Well, and I think it'll make a huge statement. You're absolutely right. And even as we consider this pushing back on this United Nations Security Resolution, which essentially says any products made in these occupied territory settlements, which includes part of Jerusalem, this sends a strong message that we see Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
The resolution, and I know you've said it clearly. I mean, you've been so kind to extol my own commitment to Israel, but no one in the world has demonstrated more overt love and commitment to the state of Israel than a guy named Tony Perkins. And so I know I'm not telling you anything new, but you know that this resolution would see the Western Wall as occupied territory.
Right.
It's just astonishing that we stand by and we just don't seem to recognize what we made a terrible mistake when we elected Barack Obama president, and his legacy is something that the Democrats, I'm afraid, will extol, but they can only do so by deceiving the annals of history in the process.
Well, I'm grateful that Republicans are wasting no time to begin cleaning up some of this mess, and you are at the head of the line in getting that done. So, Congressman Trent Franks, thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks for what you're doing, and we look forward to talking to you more as we clean up the mess of the Obama error. I wouldn't say era. I would say error, because that's what it's been.
God
it's been 8 years
friend.
Of mistake.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks so much. All right. It's Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, another great friend and hero, Congresswoman, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who, by the way, I think twice, I went to Israel with Michelle. Once we went on a congressional tour, and then just about a year and a half ago, she joined us on FRC's first tour of Israel. We're going to talk a little bit about Israel and politics of Barack Obama, but also talking about the State Department and how the State Department uses the United Nations to undermine our values both abroad and here at home. That's next when she joins me. Don't go away. We're right back after this.
From the ruling to uphold Obamacare's individual mandate, to the ruling to redefine marriage, to the ruling that allows the government to seize a citizen's home, these are the many important decisions that the United States Supreme Court has made recently. But did you know that each of these three decisions was determined by a one-vote margin? The Supreme Court's decisions affect all of us, and it decides about 70 cases every year. Over the next 8 years, we could get as many as 4 new Supreme Court justices. Furthermore, these justices will have a huge impact on the sanctity of human life, religious liberty, and the size and scope of government, and even parental rights. Join Family Research Council Action as we work to ensure the confirmation of Supreme Court justices who will uphold the Constitution and simply apply the law as the founders intended. Become a member today at frcaction.org. That's frcaction.org.
consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness. It really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income along with Social Security and your maybe a pension. Have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Hey, by the way, this program comes to you because of folks like you across the country who partner with the Family Research Council. We are not government-funded. We are not NPR. We are Washington Watch, and we're here as a Christian voice in our nation's capital, bringing you the news not through the filter of the liberal media, but as you hear each and every day through the newsmakers themselves. And so if you'd like to be a part of supporting the Family Research Council and this radio program, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. We'd love to have you as a partner. Speaking of partners, someone I've worked very closely with, well, you know what, I keep saying this, but it seems like I've been here a long time, probably going back almost a decade, is the former Congresswoman from the state of Minnesota, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. She was a member of the House Intelligence Committee and worked on Israel issues, worked on a number of issues, worked on everything conservative. In fact, was one of the ones that led the charge against Obamacare. In fact, I remember speaking at one of her rallies she held at the state Capitol here in Washington, steps of the Capitol, when the president was pushing, Nancy Pelosi, pushing Obamacare, and I think over 40,000 people joined. And that really gave birth to the Tea Party. And she was also a chairperson of the first Tea Party caucus in Congress. And she joins me now in studio. Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Partnering with you over the years has been nothing but a pleasure and a delight.
Well, we've had some interesting times.
Yeah, we have. And now this is a new world that we haven't been a part of, where now we have Republicans controlling the House, the Senate, and the White House. And we're going to see, I think, fruition to a lot of the work that we've been doing over the decades. It wasn't failure. It was just laying a lot of foundation for what I think is going to be some miraculous days in front of us.
A lot of plowing.
Answer to prayer.
Answer to prayer.
I want to thank your listeners both for supporting FRC financially. I can say authoritatively, as one who served here in Congress, there is no organization like FRC FRC has no peer here in this city. I'm extremely grateful for this organization, their presidents on Capitol Hill. They were pivotal in the wins and victories that we saw in this election, and it only happened because of your listenership, their financial contributions, their prayer contributions, and the countless volunteer hours that they put forward. So I thank you so much for this audience, and just the chance to thank this audience for all that they've done. They've been pivotal in now reaching this pinnacle point of where we are with President Trump in the White House, and where we're going to see things like the defunding of Planned Parenthood, which has been a decades-long dream, and also the repeal of Obamacare. This wouldn't have happened without an organization like FRC and also the great committed believers that listen to your show.
Well, we had a private dinner on Capitol Hill last night with some members, and kind of got some inside information.
We had some Shekinah glory in that room last night. I have to tell you, I wish everyone listening to your show today could have been with us in that room, because it was Shekinah glory in that. We heard a commitment, I believe, to seeing some of these issues that we have labored in the trenches on for years. We're going to see a fruition, I think, of all these prayers and these countless hours. And this is where now believers should really be crying out in praise to a majestic God, because God is hearing our prayers, and we're going to see answers to those prayers in the days ahead. And so that's why it wasn't just about being in prayer in the last quarter of last year because of a crucial election, a life-changing election. This is really an unparalleled opportunity for believers to be in prayer, because what I want to challenge your listenership is think about 4 years from now when the next presidential cycle comes along. We now have an obligation, according to the book of Romans, to be in prayer for those in authority. Can you imagine if we are beseeching God for the next 4 years to be a part of this decision-making process, what the outcome will be 4 years from now if we are faithful in prayer? And so I'm crying out to your audience, would you please join us in prayer on a daily basis for the leaders and the issues? And this isn't about politics. This is about biblical morality. This is our time to press on our pastors out of the pulpits. Tell your pastor you want to hear about biblical issues being preached from the pulpit, and then pray for those in authority. That's our job as believers, and we can't let that guard down for the next 4 years. We need to be in prayer. This is a blessed time and an opportunity for every believer listening today.
Well, it's kind of like Nehemiah in, you know, when he got word that the walls were down, the city was in ruins, the people were in despair, and he prayed.
Yeah.
I mean, he went to his knees, he prayed, and I believe you're absolutely right.
First things first.
I think that's what Americans did. I saw it, I heard it, I participated in it. People, there was a point of desperation as Nehemiah. But then as he prayed, and that you see that through the entire book of Nehemiah, he was a man of prayer. Mm-hmm. But he was also a man of action.
Total man of action, and a leader who inspired his own people to rebuild the wall. That's what we hope to have happen now in 2017. Rebuild the wall in America. And it takes all of us. I tell my children, never despise small beginnings. And again, your listening audience is so crucial in this effort to continue to support the work of FRC. That voice has to be heard on Capitol Hill. But we also have to be in prayer. So I want to encourage people in their daily devotional, be in prayer for those in authority. In your couple's Bible study or your ladies' Bible studies or men's Bible studies or in church on Sunday mornings, be in prayer like you've never been before, and we will see results. I have no doubt that was the miracle of 2016. The story of 2016 was God's people getting on their faces, confessing sin, repenting of sin, and crying out to God, and God miraculously heard our prayer. Now our job, Tony, is to continue faithfully in prayer, and we will continue to see God's hands work if we remain in that position of humility and crying out to Him.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann joins me in studio. Michelle, I want to talk a couple issues specifically to be praying about because I think they're critical as we move forward as a nation. One we were just talking about with Congressman Trent Franks, a good colleague of yours.
Love that man. He's the best.
He is a warrior for all things good.
Amen.
And so Israel, obviously, you know, pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
Yeah.
We are commanded to love Israel, to look out for their well-being. That doesn't mean that we give them a pass on everything. Mm-hmm. We talk to them when their things are wrong, but we treat them as an ally mm-hmm. as they are for a multitude of reasons. That's one thing we need to be praying about. But also how in the last 8 years our government has been perverted. To
Amen.
Be used right. to advance an ungodly agenda.
That's
and
right.
one of the places that's been so prominent, and we even see it on this Israel issue, how the State Department, John Kerry in this case, used the United Nations mm-hmm. to through the Security Council to slap Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've seen over and over again how the State Department has used the United Nations to undermine American values both abroad and here at home.
Well, there's no question. I was in Israel 2 weeks ago, and I can tell you on the ground that Jewish people are so thrilled that Donald Trump is going to be the next president because they see in him a friend to Israel. They were horrified by the actions of Barack Obama. And clearly, Barack Obama put every incentive to undermine that government. We even know today that Barack Obama himself intervened to defeat Bibi Netanyahu when Bibi Netanyahu was running for re-election to be prime minister. President Obama is talking about Vladimir Putin intervening in America when he himself intervened purposely to undermine Netanyahu, and Obama doesn't deny it. So the United States, if those of us who believe in the biblical admonition in Genesis, that those who bless Israel are blessed and those who curse Israel are cursed, we recognize that the United States as a country has been in a position of cursing Israel. And we know that that redounds to negative consequences for our country. I think now, happily, we're looking at a different situation where the incoming president appears that he wants to be in a position of blessing. How does the State Department, how does the United States government bless or curse? And you brought it up yourself with the State Department, where we've seen such evil come out of our State Department, unfortunately, where financial incentives are withheld from countries unless they advance, for instance, the gay agenda. Mm-hmm. In a country that doesn't believe in the gay agenda, but the Obama State Department has said, look, you have to have a gay pride parade. You have to make sure that you can show us that ministers are marching in these gay pride parades. What? The U.S. government is telling another government you have to have gay pride parades? That's unbelievable. You won't get your PEPFAR money. You won't get your U.S. aid money unless you follow our radical social agenda. You know, we laughed about this earlier. We conservatives are always blamed that we want to, quote, talk about social
right.
issues too much. That's all the left will talk about are social issues. And yet they're willing to use U.S. tax money, in other words, your listeners' hard-earned tax money, to beat over the head other nations to come into conformity with lifestyles and behaviors that we know can be detrimental to people and that don't advance the American cause. So I think we are looking at a new day, but we do want to make sure that the State Department does what they were originally founded to do, and that's to carry out foreign policy positive for the United States. And that doesn't mean that we use the State Department to beat over the head
right.
countries to engage in behavior that they abhor.
Well, in abortion, they've been pushing that agenda, but it's been done to the detriment of a stated objective by Congress in our foreign policy, and that is religious freedom.
Oh, yeah. They don't believe in religious freedom. They deny religious freedom to Muslims, to Hindus, to Jews, to you name the group. They have to deny their sincerely held religious beliefs in order to get the money that they desperately need from the United States government. We are hoping that we will see a decoupling of that, and that instead the positive interests of the United States will be advanced abroad, and so, and especially with persecuted people,
right,
that persecuted people will be helped, and that Christians who've been flailing, because that's really the story of the Middle East, has been the persecution and the eradication of Christians from the Middle East. We hope that that will now be ending, and that the cries of their voices will be heard.
But as you had nearly a decade of experience mm-hmm. here in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C., with the various bureaucracies mm-hmm. and the different agencies, the I'm going to use the term bureaucrats, liberal bureaucrats that burrow in mm-hmm. to these agencies, don't just leave when there's a change of administration.
No, because they know that they'll outlive whatever administration there is. And so that's one thing I think that your listeners need to know, is that there may be a lot of sabotage that comes against efforts by the Trump administration, by the bureaucracy. They don't want to, they've all been taught that they've got to go along with this radical agenda under the Obama administration. Many of them have bought into that. And even though there's a new commander-in-chief, they'll try and figure out ways to undermine this commander-in-chief. It happened to George W. Bush when he was president of the United States. It happened to Ronald Reagan when he was president. That's why, again, it is key that your listeners both support FRC, and I can't say it enough, that they pray. Prayer moves mountains. And that's why President Trump needs the backing of prayer, particularly as he moves forward a positive agenda. We need that prayer because the bureaucracy has decided they're going to win at the end of the day. And so we now have a new age of transparency, and hopefully that'll be very different.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Michelle Bachmann, my guest, former congresswoman from Minnesota. I'm going to talk about that prayer for a moment, because the persistency of bureaucrats. In fact, today our a family discussion on our devotional was from Luke chapter 12, where Jesus, his disciples, asked, teach us to pray. And so he taught them, it's a portion of the Lord's Prayer, what's called the Lord's Prayer. But the teaching at the end of that was about persistence. Remember, there was a man that comes to the door at night, you're already in bed, and he needs three loaves of bread for a friend who came in from out of town. Mm-hmm. And he says, I'm in bed, go away. But if you are persistent, he's eventually going to get up and give you the bread.
Amen.
And Jesus said, that's how you need to pray. Pray until you get an answer. So you say pray, we need to pray with perseverance and persistence and intentionality.
And see it through.
Absolutely.
And recognize that every time we pray, the greatest ears are listening. It's the ears of an almighty God. And we know from Scripture that even before the prayers pass our lips, Tony, God has already heard those prayers. But like you said, He tells us we are to continue in prayer. The fervent, effectual prayers of a righteous man availeth much. That means more than one day, more than
That's
one
right.
time. That means that we stand in prayer. And again, when we ourselves have examined ourselves and we confess our sins and repent of our sins, and then we cry out to God, like Psalms, I think it's 121, who ascends to my holy hill? He who has clean hands and a pure heart. None of us do.
Right.
But with the righteousness of Jesus Christ, we can boldly come before the throne of grace.
That's the key. By the way, that was Luke chapter 11. Michelle, thanks for being with us. Great
to
be with you.
Thank you for your leadership.
Folks, thank you for being with us. And I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, yes, with persistence, and you've taken your stand, you got it. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.